Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
State of the Union speech politics, where high finance and banking meets dentistry.
We all hated the bank bailout. I hated it, you hated it. It was about as popular as a root canal. But when I ran for president, I promised I wouldn't just do what was popular. I would do what was necessary.
Did you know that 24 million people get root canals every year? That's pretty popular, or pretty necessary. The White House agenda, balancing the unpopular with the necessary. Barack Obama. At least he's got tough teeth on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning, everyone. Thursday, January 28th, and The Takeaway is tough teeth and strong medicine there for an unruly Congress in that State of the Union address.
You kind of need tough body parts to survive on Capitol Hill at this point. Let's get right to the top stories we're following this morning. In his first State of the Union address last night, President Obama told his party it's time to get tough.
The Democrats, I would remind you that we still have the largest majority in decades, and the people expect us to solve problems, not run for the hills.
To that end, the president vowed to make job growth his top priority.
People are out of work. They're hurting. They need our help. And I want a jobs bill on my desk without delay.
As for health care, the president asked Congress to press forward.
This is a complex issue. And the longer it was debated, the more skeptical people became. I take my share of the blame for not explaining it more clearly to the American people.
The president did not give a specific roadmap or timeline for passing health care reform, though.
So Donna Brazil joins us now with some reaction. She's the founder of Donna Brazil and Associates, a consulting firm. So, Donna, good morning.
Good morning.
I don't want to remind you of a root canal or anything. Apparently, Chris Matthews last night forgot for an hour that Barack Obama was black. Do you think any of the unruly congressmen in the hall forgot that he's president of the United States last night?
I thought Congress was on their best behavior last night, but the president really, in my judgment, spoke directly to the American people about restoring our economy, bringing back jobs. He challenged Congress to help him complete the job on restoring economic growth in the country. And he also, I thought, rightly challenged Democrats to work together to unite and invited Republicans to come off the sidelines to work with him on a in my judgment, an array of issues.
All right, an array of issues, an impressive array of issues in a very, very long speech. Stay with us, Donna Brazil. We'll be back with you in a moment for more reaction, and we'll be joined by Fox contributor Fred Barnes.
So here's maybe a nominee for the Good Week, Bad Week column. Toyota is now recalling 1 million vehicles over problems with floor mats. The newest recall affects 5 models. It comes one day after Toyota said it's suspending U.S. sales of 8 of its most popular models due to faulty accelerator pedals. And within the past hour, Toyota says it's recalling more than 75,000 vehicles in China for that same gas pedal problem. Times are better at Ford, though. The company reported a $2.7 billion profit in 2009. That's the first full-year profit in 4 years. And new numbers out this morning show jobless claims fell less than expected last week, and durable goods orders didn't increase as much as predicted.
Earlier on The Takeaway, Haitian singer Wyclef Jean listed what the country of Haiti needs right now.
Haiti needs water, food, medicine, and Haiti needs tents. And when we say need, meaning we need the logistics to get these things to the people, too.
A U.S. embassy spokesman says there are still parts of the country that aren't getting regular supplies of food and water, and the United Nations says it needs $800 million in cash right away. Asian and European markets are up at this hour. Futures are up, too. The Dow's going to get underway at 10,236, the S&P at 1,097, and the NASDAQ opens at 22.21. Haitians and their connection, politically sensitive connection, to the state of Florida later on in the hour.
And we're also looking for your reactions to the president's speech last night. Did he say what you wanted to hear? Did you just hear more of the same? Let us know at 8778-MY-TAKE or thetakeaway.org. We're going to get more from a Democratic strategist, Donna Brazil, in a moment.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, everyone. Barack Obama's first State of the Union address last night. And for the next few minutes, we're going to have a discussion of what I really saw as a game of political chicken being played in that State of the Union address. President Barack Obama on one side, the Congress on the other side. Congress, which has gotten rather significantly in the president's way very recently. And here was a message for Republicans and Democrats.
The Democrats, I would remind you that we still have the largest majority in decades, and the people expect us to solve problems, not run for the hills. And if the Republican leadership is going to insist that 60 votes in the Senate are required to do any business at all in this town, a supermajority, then the responsibility to govern is now yours as well.
Joining us to discuss what I think is a fairly high-stakes game set out by that soundbite of President Obama in his speech last night, rejoining us, Donna Brazil, founder and managing director of the consulting firm Brazil & Associates, former Democratic strategist, rejoining us. Donna, good morning.
Good morning.
And adding a voice of Fred Barnes, executive editor at the Weekly Standard and a Fox News contributor. Good morning, Fred.
Hi, Donna.
Hey, good morning, Fred.
All right, so to both of you, it seems to me that Barack Obama is betting that the American people want progress on a number of fronts and want the Congress to get stuff done, Republicans and Democrats, and that by the body language in that room last night, it seems to me a lot of people in Congress are betting that no, what the voters in their districts and states wants is for them to stand fast and hold the line and prevent progress from taking place. First of all, am I right, and is that a good bet, Donna Brazil?
Well, I think voters really would like the members of Congress to find some common sense solutions to stop grandstanding and to play ball, to find things that they can agree on and to make a difference in the lives of ordinary people. They're really tired of the hyper-partisanship. Now, how do we achieve that in this current political environment, an election year? I think the president, when he goes to the Republican retreat this weekend, should put back on the table some of the action items that he proposed last year. Some of them they picked up and said, okay, we'll run with it. And others they said no. And find at least two or three items that they can agree on, whether it's deficit spending, whether it's tort reform as part of the health care overall package, or perhaps the small business initiatives that he announced last night. Find two or three items and see if they can agree on those items and let the rest, you know, fall by the wayside.
Fred Barnes, your reaction.
Well, you know, this challenge to Democrats in particular not to run for the hills is one that I'm sorry the president's going to lose on. They've already run for the hills. If the president wants his agenda enacted, it's going to be somehow he's going to have to make it popular, but it's not. The health care bill is unpopular. Cap and trade is unpopular. He talked about immigration reform. I rather doubt he sort of threw that in at the end of the speech. I rather doubt if that'll even happen.
Well, Fred, describe what Donna Brazil referred to a moment ago, the president visiting this Republican retreat. Is that going to be a real warm and fuzzy? I suspect you'll be there.
Yeah, it will be kind of warm and fuzzy. You know, he's spoken to them before. What he needs to do now, though, I think Don is onto something. He needs to offer them things on which he'll compromise. Say, look, because that's not what happened in the past. You know, the president let Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Democrats in Congress write the bills, write the stimulus package, and so on, and it left Republicans out, gave them nothing.
All right. Well,
but,
I heard some compromise.
Fred, I have to dispute that.
Well, hold on 1 second, Donna. Donna, hold on 1 second.
That's not nothing. That's credible.
Donna, hold on 1 second. Listen, here is a specific example of what may be a compromise, and I want to know what you think of it here. Here's the president speaking last night.
Families across the country are tightening their belts and making tough decisions. The federal government should do the same. Starting in 2011, we are prepared to freeze government spending for 3 years.
Does that play as compromise, Donna Brazil, or capitulation?
No, I think that's important. In this fiscal environment, we can't spend what we don't have. And I thought the president should have started this initiative a year ago, because when he walked into the Oval Office, the CBO had already forecasted the deficit at $1.2 trillion. So it doesn't take a lot of information to understand that this was really a huge concern that he had to deal with. And I can get into the particulars. But look, Fred and I don't agree on much of the policy that needs to be enacted, but we all agree on this, is that unless we find common sense solutions, and not from our far right or our far left, but from the middle that most Americans agree on, we will never fix Washington, D.C., and we will never come up with practical proposals that will keep us safe as well as keep the American people at least fiscally secure.
Fred?
I think the freeze is fine. I think Republicans ought to back it, but it's so small. You know, I think in 2011 it'll amount to something like $15 billion. And the baseline on spending has now gone up by more than $100 billion. And so it's a small thing, but it's not nothing. And Republicans will certainly ask the president to do more than that. You know, you have all this leftover TARP money. You have all the money that the stimulus hasn't been spent. That could add up to something like, you know, $500 billion, which could be applied to the deficit and really make a difference.
Well, the Democrats have this enormous majority, and the Obama presidency came into office on an enormous mandate. Where does that stand now, Fred Barnes?
Well, the question is whether there was a mandate. Obviously, the Democrats in Congress and President Obama interpreted the mandate as being one for a new liberal era in decision-making and legislation and so on, and yet it turns out that the country is still a very center-right country, probably more center than right. And the president's agenda was not adjusted for that. Surprisingly, he's sticking to the same agenda when I think that's probably the wrong move.
Donna?
There's clearly no appetite for us to go back to the 8 years of the previous administration where we saw the national debt double, jobs being lost, and the middle class suffering even more. This is a time to find common sense solutions to bring back the jobs and to keep this country safe and secure.
Well, the takeaway I'm hearing from both of you is that nobody wants to go back, from Donna Brazile. And Fred Barnes, it's like almost impossible to go forward. That is a rock and a very, very hard place. So I want to thank both of you. Donna Brazile, founder and managing director of the consulting firm Brazile and Associates, former Democratic strategist, and Fred Barnes, executive editor at the Weekly Standard and a contributor to Fox News. You're really going to that retreat, Fred?
Well, I'm going to find out what goes on there.
All right, Donna.
An opportunity for the president.
I'm going to go to Hawaii and be with Michael Steele and the other Republicans.
There you go. Thanks to both of you. At 15 minutes after the hour, let's take a look now at our top story once again.
As we've been discussing all morning, the president gave his first State of the Union speech yesterday. One topic he addressed was health care.
Here's what I ask Congress, though. Don't walk away from reform. Not now. Not when we are so close.
Another focus last night, employment.
Jobs must be our number one focus in 2010, and that's why I'm calling for a new jobs bill tonight.
And speaking of jobs, the number of newly laid off workers filing for first-time unemployment benefits dropped last week to 470,000. That's 8,000 less than the previous week.
And not as low as they expected it to drop. In Haiti this morning. You're listening to cheers as French rescuers made a miraculous rescue, pulling a teenage girl alive from the rubble 2 weeks after the earthquake. Food remains scarce for many survivors, though. One relief spokesperson said aid groups have divided the capital into zones to better organize their distribution. In London, meanwhile, there's a summit on the future of Afghanistan today. One goal, devising a plan to bring Taliban fighters back into Afghan society. And if you want to hear reaction to that plan, our website has an interview with General David Petraeus talking about that subject and others. You can go to thetakeaway.org and find it. That's a look at some of the stories we're watching this morning.
Coming up, Toyota is in the middle of a massive recall, but what does a driver do? And what about the company? What's happening to Toyota? We're going to talk more about it in just a few minutes. The fall of a giant, really. An unshakable, ironclad reputation of Toyota.
I drive a Toyota. Ouch.
Hey, you want that to go?
Our first news takeout takes us back to the State of the Union address last night, where presidents typically are talking directly to Congress. But last night, Obama had a message for the Supreme Court.
With all due deference to separation of powers, last week the Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates for special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections.
So, Todd Zwillick, did the Supreme Court have much of a reaction to the president seeming to criticize that decision?
there actually was a little bit of a reaction, which in itself was strange. It's rare for presidents ever in a State of the Union to directly criticize the court. Don't forget, in the room, members of the Supreme Court sit right up front, front and center, right in front of the president. And they usually sit stone-faced. Here, the president took it right to the court on this campaign finance decision. And Justice Sam Alito was seen by reporters in the press gallery looking down on him. He kind of, his head snapped back and he winced his eyes and he said two times to himself, "That's not true. That's just not true," to what the president said. Sort of a, not quite a "you lie" moment, but certainly a "you lie" no. light, you know, challenging the veracity right. of the president while he's on the dais. To himself, though, he didn't yell it.
Well, is this a C-SPAN trivia question, or is this a serious breaking of decorum?
I don't know about a serious breaking of decorum. It might be the former, John, and it's certainly a State of the Union watcher, court watcher moment. I have never seen a president criticize the court while the court sits there. There were six members of the court sitting in front of him last night. I've never seen anything like that. And as soon as, you know, you're reading the transcript, and as soon as the president starts to take it to the court like that, you're staring at the court to see right. their reactions. And they're like statues. They're like gargoyles, just no movement, no face. And it was like Justice Alito, in the end, couldn't help himself. And the dam broke, and he just sit his head back and said, "Not true, not true."
Well, we'll see. We'll see what the fallout, if there is any, from this. And we should remind people there's a key vote on Ben Bernanke at the Federal Reserve today. Right, Todd?
Test vote, yeah. Okay. He needs 60 today.
Thanks so much. Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillig.
Let's move on to the auto industry with Paul Eisenstein. He's the publisher of the DetroitBureau.com. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Well, it's good to be with Ford today, right, as they posted their first profitable year since 2005.
Yeah, big numbers from them, and it reflects the fact that Ford just has momentum everywhere they go. Their quality's up. Their product reviews are up. They've brought their costs down, so they're in a very good shape.
But on the other side of that coin would be Toyota,
mm-hmm.
which is not so much rising as
Toyota
falling.
No, Toyota seems to be sinking pretty fast.
What these new recalls of five vehicles, yesterday they stopped production of eight of their most popular models. This is a recall of five other vehicles as well.
Well, they're recalling eight vehicles. They're closing five plants. They've stopped sales of eight vehicles, some of the most popular models, including the Camry and the RAV4 and the Tundra. And we're not clear exactly when they're going to put them back on sale or begin production again because of this problem with sticky accelerators, which complicates a recall that they had last October for supposedly carpets that can jam accelerators.
Yeah, well, we had red flags on this as early as 2004. What took so long?
That's the big question that everybody is asking. Why has Toyota taken this long? The recall last year happened shortly after a California trooper was killed in a fiery crash, got a lot of headlines, and the feds just continued to press them for more. And in fact, as you and I discussed barely a month ago, there's another possible problem occurring where the brakes on Toyota Priuses are under suspect.
Okay, we're going to have to keep our eye on Toyota. That's Paul Eisenstein, publisher of the DetroitBureau.com.
Paul will be watching it, that's for sure.
Yes, sir.
And driving all the cars. That's right,
yep.
Exactly. Louise Story, our finance reporter for the New York Times, has our last takeout this morning. We referred to Ben Bernanke's vote, whether he will be reconfirmed. It's expected he will be reconfirmed at the Fed. But the big announcement yesterday was kind of a relief for the markets. The Fed decides to leave interest rates where they are for the time being. Why is it a relief?
Well, you know, once you raise interest rates, the cost of borrowing throughout the entire economy go up. What the Fed sets is called the target federal funds rate, and it's been down near zero since December 2008. A lot of economists were expecting them to keep it where it was. Nonetheless, if they had increased it, you know, would have been maybe hard in the housing market. And that's the thing to pay attention with the Fed right now is the Fed and housing, because whatever they do with interest rates will affect your mortgage rate or your possibility of buying a home. And the other thing the Fed has going on, and we've talked about it before, is this giant program where they have been buying mortgage bonds out of the market.
Right.
That has been pushing rates down on mortgages as well. They're still planning, they said yesterday, they're still planning to end that program at the end of March. And so that could drive mortgage rates up. And this is coming. I don't know if you saw, but yesterday also there was new housing data
right.
that showed in December we had drops in housing sales again. So this is coming while we're still in a pretty tentative, precarious place in the housing market.
Well, I know you always kind of break into a rash when I try to push you into speculative analytical zones, but are we seeing the Fed hamstrung here, kind of backed into a corner? They only have a lever that is negative. They don't have much leverage positively.
Well, there is not that much more they could do. They could extend this mortgage-backed security, this bond-buying program, beyond March, but they have been telling us meeting after meeting they're not going to do that. You had one dissenter yesterday. You know, they have this whole group of people who vote on this, who vote on interest rates, and one person from the Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank thinks they should go on and raise interest rates because he's concerned about inflation. But if the housing market stays down in the gutter where it looks like it's staying, I'm not sure what else the Fed will do. And so that is a conundrum for them. And if Ben Bernanke gets reconfirmed, housing will stay on his agenda.
Mm-hmm. And the other real trigger there is inflation. And so far, inflation, no real bad news.
Seems okay.
All right, Louise Story, finance reporter for The New York Times. That's your last takeout. But all this morning, we're looking for what you thought of the president's State of the Union address. Give us your take. Did he say what you wanted to hear? More of the same? And where were your takeaway moments in the speech? Call us with yours at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post it on thetakeaway.org. Coming up,
Mike from Rhode Island. I watched the Political Academy Awards last night. More rhetoric, hyperbole, and quite frankly, we've heard it all before. So we're still in a mess.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Coming up, our series about the State of Our Union continues this week, and we're going to talk with Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano in just a few moments. First, here's some of the news stories that we're following at 30 minutes after the hour. In his first State of the Union address last night, President Obama reset his focus on the economy.
Jobs must be our number one focus in 2010, and that's why I'm calling for a new jobs bill tonight.
He says another way to jumpstart the economy is to control spending.
Families across the country are tightening their belts and making tough decisions. The federal government should do the same. Starting in 2011, we are prepared to freeze government spending for 3 years.
The president also called for cooperation from Congress on health care reform. But earlier on The Takeaway, Congressman Eric Cantor, the Republican whip, told us it was politics as usual that's holding up reform.
I'm all about coming together. The problem is the words are one thing. It is the actions that have been lacking.
President Obama is heading to a Republican retreat this weekend. Former Democratic strategist Donna Brazile told us earlier this hour he needs to pick his fights.
Find two or three items and see if they can agree on those items and let the rest, you know, fall by the wayside.
Brazile says voters want less grandstanding and more common sense solutions out of Washington.
You can go to thetakeaway.org and hear the full interview with Donna Brazile and Fred Barnes of Fox News. Moving overseas, summit in London this morning. World leaders are organizing a fund to help lure Taliban fighters back into Afghan society by literally paying them. I went to Washington to speak with U.S. Central Command Chief David Petraeus. The general was asked if he would rule out talks with Taliban leadership about full reconciliation.
You would not want to rule out. That's right. Yeah, I would. But I would not, again, expect to see something productive in that particular area in the next months or you know, however long.
You can see more of that interview with General Petraeus on our website, thetakeaway.org, and part two of it will be on tomorrow's program. There's another Toyota recall to tell you about this morning. The company is recalling another 1 million vehicles over problems with floor mats. This newest recall affects five models. It comes a day after Toyota said it was suspending U.S. sales of eight of its most popular models, including shutting down assembly lines due to faulty accelerator pedals. Toyota says it's recalling more than 75,000 vehicles in China in the same day for those same gas pedal problems behind the U.S. recall. So times are better at Ford. This morning, the company reported a $2.7 billion profit in 2009, Ford's first full-year profit in 4 years. Besides executives being happy, Ford's creditors will be thrilled about all that. Markets are open. Wall Street opened this morning kind of flat. The NASDAQ was down under 2 points. The S&P was up about a point, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average opening basically flat, hovering between 6 and 2 points up. That's about all. And the stories that we are following this morning include the economy. Really, the markets are not moving based on that story that jobs job claims for last week fell, but not by as much as they had wanted.
You know, it's funny. All this week, we've been asking people for their six-word State of the Union. You know that? And so last night in the State of the Union, I bet there was a lot of people who were listening for what he had to say about the economy. And here's what President Barack Obama said during his State of the Union address.
We cut taxes for 95% of working families. We cut taxes for small businesses. We cut taxes for first-time home buyers. We cut taxes for parents trying to care for their children. We cut taxes for 8 million Americans paying for college.
And we got this response from one small business owner.
This is John. I'm calling from Oklahoma. Since August of 08, we've had terrible business at my furniture store until last month, December. We had the best December in about 3 years. I think the State of the Union is showing a real turnaround, and I'm behind Obama 100%.
So what's your take? If you're a small business owner, you can reach us at 8778-MY-TAKE or post it to our website, takeaway.org. So joining us now to talk about reaction to the State of the Union and possibly to talk about the death that we learned this morning of Howard Zinn, the historian who wrote the People's History of the United States, is a linguistics professor from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and noted critic of the American political system, Noam Chomsky. Good morning, Noam.
Hi.
First of all, what is your reaction to the last writing of Howard Zinn, the historian, who described Barack Obama as potentially a mediocre president in his last written words in The Nation magazine, and that a mediocre president at this time in our history is very dangerous?
I think he's correct. It's Barack Obama is proving to be what I think should have been anticipated. Intelligent man, you know, speaks lucidly and well, but fundamentally a familiar centrist Democrat, close ties to the financial institutions that were, in fact, the core of his support. We can see this in the policies that came out. State of the Union address, which Howard didn't have a chance to hear, it was shortly after his sudden death. Had some reasonable ideas in it. Makes sense to help community banks. It's a little ironic after the huge, basically giveaway to the major banks, which have made them even bigger and richer and more powerful than before, and more prone to disaster because of the continuing government insurance policy, which gives them perverse incentives. But nevertheless, he's right to say that a tiny fraction of the money that was poured on them should be given for community banks who really work for, you know, people who need it.
Well, Noam Chomsky, let me ask you sort of a specific structural question here, because, I mean, yes, Barack Obama, I think you can accurately describe as a centrist Democrat, at least he's trying to position himself as so. Yet with all of the increased engagement of voters in the last election, plus the mandate that Barack Obama apparently was given, how come that doesn't encourage less of a centrist and more of a coherent program directed by a single leader?
Well, to tell you the honest truth, I'm not surprised. I mean, even before the primaries, just using his website and his background and his speeches, I wrote about this and said this is what we should expect. And if you look back at his campaign, he really didn't promise very much. I mean, the slogans were hope and change, but it wasn't very clear what the change is going to be and what the hope is for. And in fact, you know, any campaign manager, including McCain's, in fact, who looked at the polls at that time, would pick as his slogans hope and change. I mean, you had 80% of the population thinking the country is going the wrong way. If you're the PR agency that's running a campaign, how are you going to present it? Well, you know, Obama presented it better, but there was very little of any that was specific, and those few things that were more or less specific, he pretty quickly pulled back from. I mean, the health care is a perfect example. I mean, he sort of gave the impression that he was going to be in favor of a health care program that was more or less in line with what the great deal, probably a large majority of the population wanted, some form of national health care. I mean, the population has been for a national health care program called single payer for decades. Okay, that dropped very quickly. Then comes the reduced version of it, the public option. Well, you know, you look at the latest polls, the public is still strongly in favor of that.
No, no, that's the, that is certainly the conundrum and the puzzle, and I think you heard Barack Obama expressing his frustration about that. But the pullback also has some other names written on it, and they're in Congress. Noam Chomsky, thanks so much for that. Noam Chomsky, of course, linguistics professor at MIT and a critic and writer on political issues, joining us there from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. And we've been asking our listeners to contribute their six-word takes on the State of the Union, a smaller speech, admittedly, than President Obama gave last night. But we got a lot of great responses. And this one came from Lauren Carbonell, who's a teacher, 10th grade teacher up in Connecticut. And she gave us this entry. She said, I decided to pose this prompt to students in my 10th grade advisory. Here's what they came up with. Big mess, mass chaos, cleaning time, or bad economy, no one is acting, or pick up our mess, become one, or what the hell is going on, ! Don't you love the internet? And lazy get fat, this is my favorite, lazy get fat, smart get strong. So that motivated us to call a couple of the students up there in Danielson, Connecticut, the Quinebaug Valley Middle College High School in Danielson, and Caitlin Hebert joins us. Good morning, Caitlin.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Sal.
And Cody Salvis joins us.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right, now you're 15, right, Cody?
Yep.
And you sound a little sleepy.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. And Caitlin, you're 16 years old.
Yep.
Now, let me just get this straight on the ground rules. Was this an assignment? In other words, did your teacher say you must do this, or did you actually get into it in some way? Caitlin?
Well, our school doesn't really work like that way too much. Advisories just, you have to. It's more like a study hall type thing and looking at different types of things. And our teacher gave us a choice to write it about pretty much anything.
All right. So you were kind of into it.
Yeah.
All right. What did you come up with?
Big mess, mass chaos, cleaning time.
Excellent. And do you think when you heard the speech last night that you heard some of those same themes in the many more words from Barack Obama?
Yeah.
I heard a lot of big mess, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I heard a lot of cleaning time. Cody, how about you? What did you come up with?
I came up with what the hell's going on.
What the hell's going on? Now, is that consistent with your personality? I suspect you might say that about other than just the administration.
Pretty much.
Right. So would you agree that you did not do this for extra credit? You were actually taken with the whole idea?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you listened to the speech last night.
Yep.
I didn't hear a lot of what the hell is going on from Barack Obama. What about you?
Well, I kind of did in the fact that there was a lot of mess, and he was kind of asking why that was going on.
So he was directing. You know, actually, you may be right.
Yeah.
So he was directing. Hey, what the hell is going on to Congress?
Well, yeah.
You know, I've said hell now enough times that probably the management at public radio is going to be.
I'm calling the FCC.
You know, something that's happening there. So, Cody, what else do you think this might be good for? This six-word condensation bit, besides your writing assignments.
It could be good for looking into how other people think the government is being run.
All right, Caitlin Hebert, give me six words on what Barack Obama might say next year.
We're doing fine, but we're not over. Let's continue.
All right. Well, you know what I'm sensing there? I'm sensing a tough road ahead, but a certain amount of optimism, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Caitlin Hebert, what do you plan to do after high school?
I want to go to college and become a special education teacher.
All right, Caitlin. Thanks for being on the program. Cody Salvis, I mean, you know, if you can, I mean, what the hell are you going to do after college?
It's going to be a TV news
commentator.
Cody,
come on.
I'm probably going to be a musician or a teacher or something.
Excellent. Take care. Cody Salvis, 15-year-old 10th grader at Quinebaug Valley Middle College High School, and Caitlin Hebert, a 16-year-old at the same school.
You're listening to The Takeaway from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here with Celeste Headlee. Coming up, we're going to talk with Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano about the Haitian relief effort in just a moment. But right now, here's a check on some leading stories at 47 minutes after the hour. Big story, of course, this morning, President's State of the Union address, his main focus, the economy, job creation, and a return to his campaign message of hope.
Despite our hardships, our union is strong. We do not give up. We do not quit. We do not allow fear or division to break our spirit.
The president takes his spirit down to Florida this morning to award billions in stimulus funds for a high-speed rail project between Tampa and Orlando, Florida. Those are some of the stories we're following this morning.
We're now joined by Wyclef Jean, a Haitian-American musician that we know not only from the music that he produces, but also we know him now because of his charitable organization, Yele Haiti, which has raised somewhere around $2 million for relief funds since the earthquake struck his native country. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, I remember seeing footage of you in Haiti just days after the earthquake struck, and you seemed shell-shocked. And I'm wondering, and you are also distressed by the lack of organization and the chaos. Have you seen things improve?
I just was back there 2 days ago, and we still have a backup of supplies at the airport, you know. They have to be a quicker way for the aid to get to the people. Compared to the first time when I was there and there was bodies on the floors, and we actually was picking up the bodies and bringing them to the cemetery, I would say we definitely saw less bodies in the city of Port-au-Prince.
You know, an Italian official said that criticized the United States for not doing enough. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton bounced back and said that, you know, the United States has been extremely generous in its aid. What do you think about the international response to the disaster in Haiti?
I think right now, you know, I keep saying that the U.S. can put up tents in 48 hours, you know, like basically a whole community. So what I would like to see is the U.S. and the international community find a way to get tents for these people. If you're watching the news right now, you see people are making tents out of plastic, out of paper, and it's going to rain any day now, and we're going to head to a phase two of this disaster.
I wanted to ask you now about your charitable organization, Yele Haiti. You've raised somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 million since the earthquake struck, and there have been critics who have been saying that there are more reputable charities to give to and that there's been questionable spending from your foundation. What's your response?
I responded on Oprah, on Oprah's show, and my response to that is, of course, Yele Haiti is, of course, one of the youngest NGOs. I think if we was a foundation, we would not have that scrutiny. I clearly said, have we made mistakes in the foundation? Yes. The years that the tax was supposed to be filed, when we caught that mistake, we filed the taxes and got a clean bill of health. That situation was clear. I myself, as Wyclef Jean, have never embarked in taking any form of donation personally for myself, for my charity. The attack basically came in because of how fast that we were raising money. But as you see, I'm still standing. Yele Haiti is even more stronger now than ever, and we're going to raise a whole lot of money for the country.
So tents, would you say the number one thing that Haiti needs right now is tents?
The number one thing that Haiti needs right now, Haiti needs water, Haiti needs food, Haiti needs medicine, and Haiti needs tents. Urgently, these things. And when we say need, meaning logistics, we need the logistics to get these things to the people, too.
An organized relief effort. Thank you so much. Singer and producer Wyclef Jean joined us from New Jersey.
The state of the union.
The state of our union.
State of the union.
My fellow Americans, the state of our union is
going to be fine.
Very, very public.
A complete disaster.
A little more honest.
Business as usual.
Our next guest is U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano. The last few weeks have been very busy for her, aside from dealing with that foiled bomb plot on Christmas Day and addressing some of the daily security concerns for the country. She's also now focusing on Haiti and the relief efforts there. And, of course, it's the morning after the President's State of the Union address as well, so lots to talk about. Secretary Napolitano, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk about Haiti quickly. The United States has pledged $100 million in aid to that country. And I'm wondering, how are the relief efforts going? We just heard from Wycliffe Jean that there's still a backup of supplies at the airport.
Right. Well, the issue is getting it from the airport into Port-au-Prince, and that's getting better every day. But that means getting trucks onto the island, the trucks to move the food and supplies from the airport into the city itself. We have been hopeful that the port would be open soon, which would allow large ships to come into the port and unload, which is the most immediate way of getting lots of aid right into the city. But the port was more damaged than people had originally thought, so there's still work being done there. Nonetheless, literally millions of MREs have been delivered. I heard him speak. There are tarps and shelters going in, medical supplies, medical personnel have been airlifted in some cases, overland routes, not just within Haiti established, but from the Dominican Republic. So lots of aid streaming into Haiti right now in the face of really such a severe catastrophe.
Well, we also heard earlier on this program that there's thousands of Haitians who are looking to get to Florida and leave Haiti during its time of disaster. And what do you think about immigration laws? Should we loosen them a bit to allow more Haitians to come in and stay here, at least temporarily?
No. I think what we've done is the right thing, which is to grant Haitians who were already here the ability to stay, to work, and to if they're working, to be able to send money back to Haiti. That in and of itself is a form of economic assistance to Haiti. But a mass migration of individuals right now would not be something that would be in anybody's best interest.
Why wouldn't that help the Haitians, at least temporarily, to leave while the capital is being rebuilt?
Well, first of all, the crossing is very, very dangerous, so let's be clear about that. But secondly, Haiti needs to rebuild, and the men and women of Haiti are in that process of rebuilding. This is their country, and the country of Haiti itself has not asked for that sort of program. What they've asked for is assistance, help them get back on their feet, and to rebuild their country, and to rebuild it even more strongly than they had before the earthquake itself.
You know, this is only the most recent thing on your plate. Obviously, your department is probably still dealing with the foiled bomb plot from Christmas Day. You received a lot of criticism over that incident, and President Obama earlier this month said that the security departments involved failed to connect the dots. He said it was a failure to connect and understand the intelligence we already had. How come 8 years after September 11th we're still making that same mistake?
Well, this wasn't a 9/11 style issue. This is very different. And let me be very clear. There were failures in the intelligence community to put some things together. Those are being repaired and have been repaired, from the moment this came to light. When you actually go in and look at what happened on Flight 253, it was a series of things, and every single domino had to fall the wrong way for Umar Farouk to get on this plane with explosives in his underwear. That is a failure that we do not want repeated. So the intel community has already taken this on our side of the ledger, which is screening, et cetera. Of course, we don't screen at international airports, but we have reached out to the international community already to say, look, he would have taken down citizens from 17 countries if that plane had gone down. So we have already embarked on a very ambitious program to increase aviation security around the world.
Well, if nothing else, the state of Janet Napolitano's union is extremely busy. She is the U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security. Thank you so much. Joined us from Washington, D.C.
Thank you.
So all of our State of the Union coverage is available on our website. If you want to hear interviews with General Davis Petraeus, Noam Chomsky, Wycliffe Jean, House Republican Whip Eric Cantor, former Democratic strategist Donna Brazile, Fred Barnes of Fox News, go to our podcast or get our interviews on demand at thetakeaway.org.
I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is the State of the Union Takeaway.
I thought I'd get some applause on that one.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.